Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Positively minded, you know, it's very important to try to find that positive mind, and it's very difficult sometimes. When things are down and things are tough, you don't know how you could reach in there and grab and uncover and find and reveal. Well, sometimes we just forget how good we are. There's a there's an element inside us, the noble self, that we haven't been able to locate. And I'm going to be in the studio with me today is Stephanie Roth, who works specifically with people around that part of themselves. Stephanie, would you talk to me about what is the noble self?
The noble self is the hero's journey, the inner champion to yourself. We're looking at the behaviors that you exhibit and the intent behind them that's positive, that's noble.
I'm sorry, Stephanie, would you do that one more time for me?
The noble self is your inner hero, your champion. We look at dysfunctional behavior, and rather than looking at the illness, we look at the wellness. We look at your noble
intentions. Who's the we here?
I, as a therapist, when I'm working with
you. I and the people that you work with who take this approach.
Yes.
Okay.
We work together to reveal the noble self.
And what you're looking at, what you're trying to find inside, when you say the noble self, I mean, does that mean that you take off your jacket and you have people walk across the puddle? Is that the noble self? You open doors for people? Is that the noble self?
Well, opening a door for someone could be noble and could be nice, but no. We look at the positive intention, the noble intention behind behaviors that many people label dysfunctional.
Well, normally, how would people treat a dysfunctional behavior that you might do differently with?
Many people may look at the behavior, examine it, and hope that by talking about it, that it goes away, that we can cure it. What I would do is look at the behavior, look at the intent behind the behavior, and focus in on that nobility.
What nobility? What intent is behind a behavior? Let's give an example of that, okay?
Okay, so overspending. The intent behind that is generosity. You want to show people that you care about them. And as opposed to looking at the negative overspending, let's focus on the generosity.
All right, so then people never deal with it, and they wind up spending lots of money all the time. And they say, good, I'm noble, I'm being generous. So you take somebody with a manic disorder and you focus on their generosity, doesn't that make them just spend more?
No, we find other ways together to use their generosity to hone in on that in a more effective way that's less self-defeating.
Oh, so interesting. If you were to find the intention that's underneath it, almost any of these dysfunctional behaviors, and I'd like you to run across a few, you can find some good intention in almost everything a person does.
Yes, I believe that.
Okay.
I believe in the hero's journey, that you're a champion to yourself.
And therefore you try to unveil that, you try to get that out of people?
Yes.
And how do you do it? I mean, people always come in and they walk in and they're always putting themselves down. The first thing they're doing is criticizing themselves. Let's say somebody comes in and they use too much alcohol. Right? And they come in and they say, I know I got to stop drinking alcohol. I can't stop drinking alcohol. What am I going to do? Tell me the Stephanie Roth approach.
Well, you have to look at it without judgment. With all the judgment, with all the criticism, it's very hard to reveal that noble self. So what I would ask is for the person coming in to just state the behavior.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, there's a tiny little mishap here that we'll fix in just a second. All this dramatic music came out of nowhere, but we can't stop it. We will stop it. Here it is. It will stop. Boy, that was an accident. That was very noble. My God, they came swimming in through another circuit. Somebody trying to stop us. I'm sorry for that interruption, Stephanie. Start again for
me,
would you?
Well, I think that with all of that criticism and judgment that you can't, it's very difficult to reveal the noble self. So I would ask someone to state the behavior without the judgment, without saying, I need to do this. This is, you know, just say, I drink a lot.
Okay, I drink a lot.
So
let me do it with you, okay? So I come to you for a consultation, and I find myself getting, you know, at the end of a day, I find that, you know, I can't help it. I have to go to the bar. I have to have a couple of drinks before I go home. I'm afraid. I mean, the work is so strenuous. Sometimes at work I carry a little bottle with me, and I take a nip in the middle of the day. And then sometimes when I wake up in the morning, I feel so nervous, I don't know how I'm going to get out of bed. I take a shot of vodka or something so nobody will smell it. And this is my life now. And my family is kind of noticing that I'm drinking all the time, and they're challenging it. But I just can't stop. Stephanie, help me.
Okay. Well, you go to work every day.
I do.
And sometimes that shot of vodka gets you to work every day, right?
Yep.
And you fulfill that responsibility of going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you bring your paycheck home and you have electricity in your apartment.
Sure.
Okay. So that shot of vodka helped you to go to work and to pay the bills, right?
Well, all right, then I'm going to drink a whole bottle. This way I'll get rich. I'm only kidding.
Yeah, I think this is tricky because a lot of people might
justify. But you see, I think what you're saying is accurate. What you're saying is, look, let's look at it. You took that drink because you wanted to go to work, because you felt yourself not going to work. So you uncovered, what you're doing, Stephanie, is uncovering in a person that they had a good idea. The idea was, I want to go to work. I want to go to work. I want to earn a living. I don't want to be homeless. I don't want to lose my family. So I'm behind my taking the shot of booze is a noble intention. If I didn't have a noble intention, I'd just be laying out in the streets drunk.
Right.
So when I come to you, I think about now, you're forcing me to think about how much I care about my work. Well, it's not my work I care about, but it's my family I care about. I don't want to lose them.
Right. And if you drank all the time and did not, or if you rather didn't drink all the time and you could not go to work, let's say you were very depressed and this is your way of self-medicating, then you might lose them. You might lose your house. You might lose your children.
That's the assumption that I'm depressed.
Okay.
Is your assumption that if you drink, you're depressed?
No. I'm just using that as an
example. Okay.
Yes. I don't think the two necessarily go together, no.
All right, let's do it with another example. You know, you work a lot with families, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
How do you uncover noble intent? And let's use one of your better examples that you've given me about the kid who sells drugs on the streets.
Okay, so you have a kid who sells drugs on the street. And by looking at that behavior, many people...
Who has a kid that sells... You have a kid, right? You had a kid? Did you know this? I mean, is this...
Yes. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Sorry. I've worked with families where there is a child who sells drugs on the street. And then you first just look at that, and the kid gets arrested a lot, and it's very dysfunctional, let's say, and people label this as really bad behavior. Then you look a little deeper, and mom works two jobs. Mom's never been able to go to back to school night. Mom's never home for dinner. And the kid has to come home by himself every day. And he really wants a relationship with his mom. Let's say the kid gets beat up at school, but mom doesn't go to school because she's constantly working, so she can't see that. And he's a 16-year-old kid is not necessarily going to come home and say, Mom, I get bullied every day. So he sells drugs with the intent that his mom could quit the second job and be a part of his life, have dinner with him sometimes, go to the school, and learn, speak to the principal, speak to the teacher, and see what his life is like. But his noble intent behind the drugs is to support his mother, behind selling the drugs, is to bring home money so they can have a relationship.
So that he could have a family.
Yeah.
When you've worked with this family, and you worked with this family in child services, I imagine, when you worked with this family, Stephanie, did they get together around this idea with talking about it? What happened?
Yeah, and by beginning to look at these noble ideas, you begin to reduce negativity, reduce hopelessness, and people start seeing each other in a different light. And Mom might be a little less angry that Johnny keeps getting arrested because she is beginning to see the noble intent behind what he's doing.
Noble intent in different situations. Do you have a number of other examples where people might not suspect the noble intent, but there is one? I mean, the most one, you know, infidelity is a big one, right?
Yes.
I mean, you would get, they'd probably burn you at the stake for what you're about to say, but because, you know, so many people object to it. But could you tell me what you think the noble intent of infidelity is? And I even hate using the word infidelity because that in itself has a judgment in it.
Yes.
But having a relationship outside of your primary relationship or what's supposed to be your primary relationship, what would the noble intent in that be?
Well, you could say that by having that, you're still there for your wife. Let's say we'll use a man being the...
Everybody uses men.
Right, of course. So we'll say that you're still there for your family in a way, and you're supporting them, and you're still having a emotional and possibly sexual relationship with your wife because you love and care about her. But there's some need that she's not meeting, and you don't want to leave that relationship because of the years it took to build a family and build your relationship. So you have someone else that you're having a relationship with to get those needs met, and in a way protecting the relationship that you is your primary or supposed to be your primary relationship, protecting your marriage.
Hmm. You know, I heard something about the French recently where they were talking about, I think Esther Perel was talking about the thing about having affairs. You know, it was so, in America, we question having affairs as such a bad thing, you know. Stepping out on your wife is such a terrible thing, but in France, it's not. In France, it's more common that everybody kind of has a mistress, but in America, they have this tremendous high rate of divorce, which nobody even questions, whereas in France, the divorce rate is significantly less. And it reminds me of a story of a woman who goes to a concert with her husband, and she points out, she says, oh, there's Mr. Beauvoir over there. And she said, who's that with him? And the husband says, oh, that's his mistress. And the wife says, oh, I like ours much better. showing the acceptance of it. Now, of course, the reason I say that, you know, people would object to it, because people love to judge. People love to sit. You know, when you sit at the bottom of the heap, you look for something underneath you, always. So people are always, that's why they love gossip magazines, and they love to see bad things and judge it. They want to tisk tisk. They want to say, ooh, can you believe what took place? Oh, do you believe that? Well, here on The Positive Mind, I tend not to do that. I tend not to have the judgments out there. I do have judgment. I do care about what our government is doing in the rest of the world. I do care deeply. I do oppose. I do present myself. But I don't judge. I could see George Bush as being a manifestation of our society and the world I live in and what I have done to create him. I could see that. But I can only see that because I don't have that heavy judgment. To me, nobody is truly evil. Everybody manifests an evil that is somewhere around us. But people love to judge. Now, you, Stephanie, are one of the few people that I've ever met who don't do that. You don't sit in judgment of people. You actually look and you do something even different than I do. You not only accept what people are and who they are, but you empower by uncovering this noble self.
Right. And you cannot uncover the noble self if you're sitting in judgment, if you're criticizing yourself, or if I was criticizing the person I'm in the room with.
Right. What are some other examples of where the noble self is uncovered?
I think you could use an example of anger and rage.
Good, good, good. Rage. You know, a person comes to you and they say to you, I feel too much rage and I'd like to do something about my rage. I really feel over rageful. What goes on underneath rage? What do you uncover?
a lot of sensitivity.
Oh, sensitivity. Brilliant. Brilliant. No, that is brilliant, if you think about it. Most therapists would say rage covers sadness. What you're saying is rage covers sensitivity. It means you feel too much, so you get angry.
Right.
So your rage is showing how sensitive you are. So you, Stephanie, would focus on the sensitivity of a person, which if you did that with me when I was raging, I guarantee you I would get right to it because it would be so appreciated that somebody saw my sensitivity. Great.
Right.
That's great.
Thank you.
Sure. Where else might you work?
We could use an example of cyber sex. A lot of people are looking. This is also a behavior that people look at as bad, as dysfunctional, you know, again, which is all judgment. So you look at just the behavior. We're looking at cyber sex. We could say that people are seeking love. People are seeking intimacy. People may be seeking sexual release. And these are all not bad behaviors. This is the intent behind that. Everyone wants to be loved. Everyone wants to love someone.
Well, that may be the case, but intimacy, I don't know about the word love. I got a lot of questions about how that's tossed around and what it means. But everybody wants to feel connected to someone, and sometimes the only way they could do it is by doing it either in their imagination, which a lot of people do sexually, and that's masturbation, or sometimes they do it through connection, through emails, through some way. You have a limited long-distance relationship. You can have an email relationship that doesn't have to be cyber sex, but it's a long-distance relationship. You never meet the other person. But it means that you do want to get close to someone. Now, here's the problem with all of these. Once you get into something like cyber sex or just relationships and email, there is a chance that you get caught in the rut of it, that you don't uncover the noble intent and you don't work towards identifying and manifesting your noble intent. Does this make sense to you? Is that kind of the way
yes.
you're working?
Right. That makes sense to me. But I believe that looking at the wellness would be looking at that desire for intimacy as opposed to looking at the illness will help us to reveal the noble self and therefore maybe make more intimate connections with people who are physically present.
So let's think about how you might do that with somebody who's doing cyber sex, or let's just say somebody who's got a long-distance relationship on the Internet. In a long-distance relationship on the Internet and you talk about it, what you would do with them is you would talk to them about their relationship. You would talk about how they feel. You wouldn't talk about it as if it's a thing. Oh, cyber sex. You would talk about the actual relationship with the person on the other side of that computer.
Absolutely. And what they get from that relationship, which is important.
When you say what they get from it, you mean are you trying to say uncover the hidden meaning or try to get the hidden beauty?
The hidden beauty.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really hard for people to believe. You know, hidden beauty is hard because, as I said, if it doesn't make me comfortable, I'm going to judge it. So people want to judge other people's behaviors all the time. Here you are going around taking a look at people who are behaving in ways that other people judge, and you're saying, well, let's look at that. Now, Stephanie, don't mind if I push you on this, okay, a little bit, because I know I'm going out to the edges, and I know this is difficult, but how could somebody hitting a child, you know, now you've dealt with this, and I know that in your family work, Stephanie Ross, by the way, has worked with child services in the homes. She's gone to the homes of people and families who have been violent and, you know, and then you get to the point of violence. And when I say violence, I mean hitting. I don't mean violence. I spoke to a man earlier today who said, I was beaten by my mother, he said, but, you know, she didn't beat me to punish me. She beat me to kill me. Mm. And I felt that one. I know what that is. But in the case of somebody who, like, you know, uses physical force in the house, right? And there you are. How do you uncover a positive intention behind it?
I think that you have to look at what caused the initial argument. What was, you know, did a father hit his teenager because she was having sex with someone and he felt that he needed to protect her? And he got really angry because she was being unsafe. And the fear is that his daughter is going to come home pregnant and she's not going to be able to support this child, or maybe, you know, whatever her decisions about that are. So his fear kind of took over, and that was his way of, you know, expressing it.
And so,
the noble intent is protection of his daughter.
Protection is a noble intention. You know, it's really kind of beautiful because so many people have that behind them somewhere that they would love to have that. A little later in our show today, I'm going to talk about some of the hidden intentions that I find with people that I consider to be honorable as well. Honorable as well. You know what I mean? It's like this isn't just looking at the good side of it. Because what you do and the work that you do, as I understand it, is you take it and you stretch it out. You pull it out. It's like you're making pizza dough. You know, you're pulling it out. You're kind of not letting it just be there. So your intention is, you say to a man who is being highly critical of his daughter or too restrictive, you say, so you really care about your daughter and you really feel protective. Then you talk about the protectiveness, but not of his daughter, but his protectiveness itself.
Right.
And you allow the protectiveness to be celebrated in some way, but it doesn't have to be manifested in the control of other people, because once he gets to recognize he is a protective man, he would also recognize that part of his protection is helping his daughter prepare for her life without controlling her.
Right.
And
absolutely.
He would get to that, and you would help him with that.
Right.
Very interesting idea, Stephanie Roth. Any other manifestations of this?
I believe that you could really use this in numerous examples. So let's take... We said overspending already. Let's take suspicion, someone who's highly suspicious.
Okay, let's go with that. Suspicious, the nature of a suspicious person, right? Somebody comes in and they're paranoid, right? And they come to you. What are you going to do with a paranoid person?
We're going to talk about a little bit about the paranoia and how that might manifest itself. And then we're going to look, and a lot of times that also could be protection. Protection of themselves, protection of their family. And it's similar in that it's... People who are paranoid could be very restrictive with what they do, who they allow in their home, where they eat, these kinds of things. And all of that can go back to, I'm protecting myself, I'm protecting my loved ones from whatever they believe.
Do you actually believe, and this may be very interesting because there are a lot of therapists who listen to our program for ideas.
Okay.
Probably you're going to have open a school for teaching this heroic journey. Do you believe that if you went to somebody who was overly suspicious and celebrated their suspiciousness as a natural act of defensive, protective behavior, and you said, yes, I understand. I understand that you want to protect yourself. I understand that you want to close the doors and make sure nobody comes in. I understand that you very often think or perceive that people are plotting against you. Sure, there's this natural part of you that's more protective than the average person is, because you have a bigger dose of protectionism, you know? And it's a beautiful thing, because imagine if you were taking that and you were bringing up a family, you know, it would be wonderful if you weren't overboard with it, or if you were working for a country, it would be wonderful. You have one of those gifts. Now, how that gift comes out is to keep the world at bay, because you truly don't believe that that gift is developed enough that you're safe. So right. Your work with a paranoid person is to help them see this self-protective part of themselves and not see it as crazy.
Right, to stop criticizing it, to stop judging it, and to turn it, reveal the noble intent behind it, and then take it into a more positive behavior.
You know, Stephanie Roth, by the way, Stephanie Roth, who practices this noble psychology and I find fits very well in with the positive mind. I imagine, Stephanie, that most people go to therapists. See, most couples go to therapists, and usually one person's trying to prove that the other person is wrong. So they go to a therapist, and they say to the therapist, tell my husband that he's wrong. And the husband says, tell my wife that she's wrong. That's how they go to a therapist. Then the other ones, when they come in alone, they want you to tell me that I'm wrong. Tell me how bad I am. I have seen so many people who walk into therapy for chastisement. Therefore, when they go to a therapist who is harsh on them, they feel good in a way. They're getting what they want. In fact, if you listen to some of the radio shows that have Dr. Phil or Judge Judy or Judy Kuryansky and other people like that, they're generally harsh on people. They generally tell people, what's the matter with you? Wake up, you dumb bunny. Generally is the attitude.
Right.
And people flock to that. Oh, good, tell me that. They used to flock to Gary Null. Gary Null would tell people, how could you eat that? That is terrible, and you should never do this and never do that. And he was highly judgmental. And people flock to it, and they go to all the nutritionists, and they go to people who criticize them. If you had a newspaper that only reported good news, nobody would buy it. People want the downside of things, and I think people go for treatment who want to be told that they're sick and crazy and dysfunctional and that maybe it'll get a little better, but they really prefer, I think, the block that you and I have when people come in, is most people just want to feel bad and stay in the same position. They just want it to work better. You know, I broke up my relationship, now I want to learn how to make my old system work better.
Or do they believe that that's all there is? Do they come in with a feeling hope? Usually not. So we can give them hope, and so that we can change that, so they can come in feeling like we're going to reveal this noble self, and we're going to do that because it's an option. My only option is not to come in and, you know, focus on all this negativity, focus on the dysfunction, focus on the illness. We can focus on the nobility.
And when you do, I mean, the question, part of the question is, what do you, if you focus on it, and if you could reach down into it and dig it out, then you're really doing something, you know, then you're making a difference for people. If they'll stand there long enough to listen, you know?
Right.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. When we come back, we're going to be looking at some more experiences of this. And I'm going to be teaching you some of my observations of where I find the noble idea. We'll also try to take your calls as well today. My guest in the studio is Stephanie Roth, who could be reached at 212-757-4488, just in case she has to run out of here. Hey, and this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. That is Schindler's List you were just listening to. The theme by Tasman Little. And I tell you something. Talk about questions of nobility. Hey, friends, remember the word noblesse oblige? Right? We were taught that in school as a political thing. It's the obligation of the people of high rank or social position to be kind and generous. How about you? If you're of high rank or social position, do you find yourself giving, tithing to people below, people who are not as fortunate? If not, it's a good question, because noblesse oblige is the obligation of the nobility. And I know most people don't want to see their noble selves. But when you're fortunate and when you've been able to achieve things in life and you've been able to get past a lot of your troubles in life, you know, you're really lucky. It's good to give a little bit. Anywhere. Any place. There are people who have noble intentions. My guest, by the way, is Stephanie Roth. Stephanie, welcome. Glad you're here. How do you like being on WBAI? You've heard us on the station before, but you were never on air before with us, right?
No, this is my first time on air. I've never been on air before.
Yeah, how do you like it? You're doing very well.
Thanks.
Stephanie Roth focuses on a positive aspect of people. She focuses her therapy and does work with people in uncovering their noble intention. Now, this noble intention grows out of the work in family work, where there's a family systems work. Is it family systems or family, what's it called?
Functional family therapy.
Functional family therapy, yeah. Functional family therapy had in its, in, somewhere inside it, squaws inside, this little concept of the noble self, which Stephanie worked with and took that out and started working with adults. It really works beautifully with teenagers. She has, she's one of these people that teenagers take to automatically. If you got a troubled teenager, you know, this is the kind of person you want to send them to, because she doesn't judge. She's not so distant from teenagers that they feel like they're talking to an old person. And they feel accepted by you. And then on top of accepted, in those teenage years, when you need most to someone help you, to find someone who could help you recognize the goodness in you, that's what you do. You help them find the goodness in them. And you manifest it. Okay, now I want to talk about different kinds of people and their different noble ideas. Let's think about, for example, and I'm going to run down a group of people here. Let's think about the perfectionist. You know, you ever meet a perfectionist? They especially come out around Christmas time and they're putting everything in place and everything is lined up. Perfection, everything has got to be right. They can't stand. There's something about every perfectionist. Every perfectionist you will ever meet has one secret, and the secret is that they feel like there is something wrong with them. You see, people who are perfectionists believe that there is an imperfection, and they could spot it, they could smell it, and it's inside them, but they're trying to fix the outside world. If they can make the world perfect, maybe they won't notice their own imperfection. So whenever you see somebody who is a perfectionist, you know they've got an imperfect little secret. And usually, you know, if you dig deep for those secrets, especially with the perfectionists, it's a sexual secret. That's why you find so many people who are leaders and, you know, in the religious leaders or, you know, in the people who are likely to preach the most are likely to have that kind of a secret hidden somewhere and it comes out. But behind perfectionists and their dysfunctional way of operating, there is this thing. There is a sense of integrity. There's if you take away the stress of the perfectionist, you have perfection. Perfection is beautiful. Perfection in its own way, to have something have its own integrity. So one of the things you can uncover with somebody who's a perfectionist is their appreciation of integrity, integrity of being, integrity of self. I'll move on to another type of person. What about the person who's always the doormat, the giving? They're giving, 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 and they're giving because they want to be loved. They so want to be loved by everybody that they just give you whatever you want. They make sacrifices, and they're your doormat, right? They give, they so hard. They want to be needed is the most important thing. Well, underneath them is an appreciation of the bond of love. Underneath them, they appreciate more than most people what a true bond of a relationship is like. And in a very beautiful way, they have a sense of what it is. Now, they do it in a dysfunctional way because they're giving to get, but they do know what the bond is about. How about the person who is always chasing after success? The achieving person, the person who wants to achieve everything, they're chasing after success, you know, the workaholic, what is it about them? Well, you know, the one thing about them is that they have a sense of value. The person who is a person who is always striving for success is weighing what is valuable, what is not. Where will I go? Where will I not go? So they have a great sense of weighing value. And you could tap into that. You could look at that with somebody and say, you know, you do have this essential desire to be valuable and to estimate what is truly valuable. Going along with that, let's take the person who is the deep romantic, the one who's living in a lot of grief, the one who is very self-indulgent, and it kind of looks like they're just living in misery all the time, the drama queens, they call them, or drama kings. The one thing about all of those people is that there is a sense of independence about them. Their clothing are different, they dress differently, they live differently. There is a sense of being oneself. The noble idea is being able to recognize that there is an independence that is valuable, and being oneself is of value. Another type of person who is this, who is kind of the hobbyist who hides out in the basement, you know, the withdrawn schizoid type of person who may be playing on the internet all day or developing some hobby or playing his guitar in the basement. This kind of person has an appreciation of competence. Being able to achieve things and do things a little at a time. They have a sense of competence that's much more than the person who has sense of integrity. I mean, each one of these types have some sense of a noble sense of some quality which we can pull out and work with. How about the person who's always afraid? We were talking about the frightened person, right? There is something in them that knows security. They know security, and they reach for security, unlike everyone else. There's another kind of person, the person who's always into this frenetic, I got to taste everything, I got to do something, I got to have a lot of plans, I'm always moving all over the place, I never complete anything. They have a sense of happiness. If you ever notice about them, they call them the ultimate positive minds. They have a taste of happiness that very few people can taste. Getting down to the last two, there is one which is the one who's always dominant, the dominant controlling type, the one who's controlling everything and everything around him. There is an incredible, incredible desire to protect in this person. And you could unlook and reveal that sense of protectiveness. If God were a type, he would be this type, you know. And lastly, the person who is like the stubborn, neglectful person, they're neglectful. They kind of neglect everything, passive-aggressive people. They have underneath it all a desire to be at peace. They are looking for everything to kind of calm down, and they have a sense of peace that most other people don't have. This is not just my work. This is the work of the Enneagram, which I have studied for many years. And a lot of the people who have been studying the Enneagram, it's kind of you find your inner self. Hey, we've got a few minutes. You know, we may have minutes for a few phone calls. 212-209-2900 is our number here. My guest in the studio is therapist Stephanie Roth, who is bringing us a concept of a noble self and finding the noble self. If you have questions for her or about your own noble self, we will take your calls. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. That may have been too quick.
You know? I've been a long-time listener, and I just wanted to chime in on this thing about nobility. I've been in therapy for about 15 years, and the past 2 years, I've been with a therapist who, he didn't try to make me feel bad. As a matter of fact, he helped me to see that I wasn't such a bad person. I was in a family that had an abusive father, and he helped me to see and actually helped me to learn to forgive my father, which really helped me to move on in my life. And at this point, I feel good about myself now. And I think that it's true that sometimes you just need to look and see, even though that person may be domineering and maybe cruel, but somewhere deep down inside, I had to look and see my father in a different light and see that maybe he passed through the same thing that I was going through.
You know, that's one of the great things that people do eventually. I think there are many parts of a person in their relationship with their parents. I think a person has to learn, when they've been mistreated by their parents, they have to learn how to be angry. They have to learn to let themselves be angry. Most people who are depressed, almost everybody who is depressed, takes away their right to be angry at their parents. If somebody comes in here and depressed, I could generally tell you they feel that they don't have a right to get angry at their parents specifically. Now, that's just the beginning phase. Once you get to your right as a child to have to respond to that which you did not receive as a child that was necessary and vital, and you have a right to get angry, once you have a right to get angry, then that's when you can let it go. Because once you see that you're entitled to that, then you begin to understand them. But sometimes just understanding them without going to that other place, I find it just buries it a little deeper. With you, obviously, something happened. You found a therapist who reparented you. You found a therapist who acted like a father that you never had. Can you agree with that, or mother you never had?
In a sense, yeah, that could be so. But also, I did have that opportunity to be angry. And in a sense, I found myself where, when I do talk with my father and he does try to be forceful with me, I don't just stay blank and just let him listen and just listen to him. I respond to him and I let him know, you know, at this point, hey, I think this is where we need to make the turn here in our conversation.
Oh, nice going.
You know?
Good going. What's your name?
My name is Nelson.
Nelson, it's nice to talk to you. Thank you for calling in.
Okay.
Thank you for listening.
And I'll continue to listen.
Thank you. Take care. Thank you. I want to give out a little shout to New Zealand. As I just learned, we are being podcast every day from New Zealand. How wonderful. How far away can you get? 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, Armand. I'm not going to give my name because I call a lot, but a few times. But this thing about an honorable intention, something happened many, many years ago, and I like to get the therapist's spin on it, and maybe it helped me kind of put things in perspective. At one time, I was in a very negative marriage, and my ex-wife had a tirade at once, and she made some comments about my parents that were, I mean, horrible. I mean, and she persisted. And my anger just grew and grew. And I got to the point that I was actually about ready to punch her. And I knew that had I done that, I would have done major damage to her and to myself and to our son. But my anger was at a fever pitch. And the only thing I could do to diffuse it, and it's disgusting, but I, and pardon me for saying this over the air, but I actually spit in her face, and she said to me that was disgusting, and I said to her, you know, I said, I did that to save your life because I was at that point, and I don't want to, you know, glamorize it that I'm an honorable guy, but what the therapist said kind of made me feel that that was not excusable, but maybe my actors, discussing as it were, did something that was beneficial to her, beneficial to our son, and lastly, beneficial to myself. And I'm going to hang up and maybe have her comment on if that's possible. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for calling. I think that that is exactly what we're talking about, revealing the noble intent behind that. And maybe spitting in her face is a lot, or definitely spitting in her face is a lot less harsh than punching her in her face. It's safer. And as you said, exactly what we were saying before, it doesn't necessarily justify the behavior, but looking at it and looking at protecting your son, protecting your wife, is looking at the positive spin on it and going to that place and looking at what we can do next time that's still positive.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
How are you? This is John.
Hello, John.
And thank you also to Stephanie for this really, really nice show.
Thank you, Stephanie, for this really
nice
show.
Thank you.
Yes. I
thank two Stephanies. There's the other Stephanie, who is my co-engineer, who I also want to thank for a good show. Now I'm in a room with two Stephanies.
Yeah.
Really kind of remarkable. I say the word and two people look at me.
I just wanted to comment, when I was listening to you describing the different personalities and sort of the sort of quality from the Enneagram, that kind of in my mind, I was kind of in my head imagining, for example, when you were saying the person who's always sort of actively looking for things to do is the person who really knows sort of the idea of being happy or happiness. The person who's sort of controlling is very protective. And I just imagine it would be really beautiful to, like, you know, like if you could write like a poem or something that actually sort of synthesizes that wisdom in sort of contrasting the personality to the quality. And I would just love to read something like that.
Oh, I hear. What a beautiful idea. What about you writing it?
Well, I could email you and maybe you could send me back and I'll write it. I'll be happy to write it, yes.
Right. Well,
I didn't get the whole list of all the different personalities, but I'm happy to do that, yeah.
Well, you send me a list. You send me an email. I will send you the list or I'll send you the place you could find it. And then you write the poem. And I'd love to hear it, John.
Beautiful.
Great. Well, we'll read it on air, too.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you.
212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Such beautiful people we have, you know. You know, it's something about, we have this delay that we use, and it's mandatory. It's a seven-second delay when people get on air. We have to give filters. We've never, in all the years, I've been on air with WBAI for 18 years, and I'll tell you, the most beautiful audience. The you know the word audience, by the way, is right because it means audio. It means listens, right? Audience is not right when people are just watching something. Those are, what do you think they are? See the magic word escaping you? What do you call people who watch things? Yeah, viewers. All right, I'll take that. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Spectators is the word. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, hi. I've listened to your show for most of the years, and I'm just calling because I wanted a reference to see someone. I've tried myself to find people, and the last therapist I saw, when I began to speak to her, she would do a lot of facial expressions. And I'm at a very low point in my life, and I really need help, and I don't want to be in this point anymore.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You sound so depressed. You know? Did somebody leave you recently?
I was in an abused child, and
recently, what happened recently?
Well, recently I've been in this abusive relationship,
mm-hmm.
And I just need to get out, and I have a hard time getting out of this relationship.
Yeah, you say so. It sounds like you more than anybody else needs to find your noble heart so that that noble heart can take care of you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It sounds like you've been running out of your own self-nurturance. Sure, call my office, 212-757-4488, and I will find you somebody, I promise. And we'll get to work on this.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure, sure. You know, this is the holiday season, and during the holiday season, a lot of the stuff shows up. And we're lucky when we have people like Stephanie Roth around who are treating people, and Stephanie Dombra, and Ori Amini Morrison, James Bowen, the people I know who work with people with such a grand heart. You know, they have such great intention. It's beautiful to see. This is great. I am going to be, we'll be gone, and I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. this Tuesday. And we'll be continuing with more exciting thoughts and ideas. Stephanie Dombra, Stephanie Roth, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, and we will be back with you on Tuesday. If you want to go to my website, it's thepositivemind.com. Here's a little fun jazz for you. Maybe perk up your spirits, my friends. Cal Jada.
That's the voice of Norman Mailer, the late great American author. Join us for a celebration of Mailer's long life and work on a special two-hour version of The Next Hour, Sunday, December 16th at 11 a.m., with Norris Mailer, Michael Mailer, John Buffalo Mailer, Jimmy Breslin, Joyce Carol Oates, Jason Epstein, Patricia Bosworth, and more. That's a celebration of Norman Mailer, Sunday, December 16th at 11 a.m., here on WBAI.
And you've got these corporate read bags running the thing, and they keep talking of bringing democracy to places that need it. We need the democracy right here.